Hello, boys and girls, and welcome to the Ted Teo Business Show, the best place for actionable advice for entrepreneurs. This is Ted, your friend and host speaking. Today, we're talking about art with my friend, Magna Girida. Magna is the founder of Let's Curate. Now, after she was mesmerized by the creativity behind the traditional art form of a painter at the airport in India, Magna realized that there are many artisans out there who never get a chance to showcase their talents to the world, and that's what led her to start Let's Curate. Today, Let's Curate provides a platform for artisans around the world to showcase their talents and sell their crafts to a wider audience. Now, in today's show, Magna shares how she pivoted her business during COVID, how she fosters great relationships between her artisans and her customers, and how she showcases her artisans and turns them into ambassadors for her company. All these and more on today's show after this quick commercial break. Hey guys, it's Ted. Thank you so much for joining me on my show and for all the support. If you ever found any value from the show, I would love if you could subscribe to the show, leave a review on Apple Podcasts, and share the show with somebody who will find it useful as well. All episodes, tools, and resources are available on tedteo.com, so make sure you log on to tedteo.com, that's TEDTEO.com, and make sure you sign up for the newsletter if you want to hear updates from me directly. And now, let's dive right in. Hey Magna, thank you so much for joining us today. It's so nice to have you here.
Thank you so much, Ted. I'm so excited to have this very exciting, I'm sure, conversation, and I cannot wait to begin.
Yes, me too. But before we begin, Magna, please share with us so we can get to know you better. Please share, who is Magna Girida when she isn't working?
Yes, so just a quick recap. To begin with, of course, my most fulfilling identity is founder of Let's Curate, which is my baby, a 2-year-old baby now. It's a global curator platform, and the objective is to empower and celebrate independent artisans from around the world. Though, you know, this platform has existed just for about 2 years now, it's kind of been in the making for almost a decade. And I'm sure we'll you know, dive deep into that more. But it's been a journey, and I'm very excited as to how far it's taken me so far.
So, Magna, you are currently the founder of Let's Curate, if you explain, and it's a platform that empowers and celebrates independent artisans around the world. But tell us a little bit more about yourself. Mm-hmm. I know you've been in New York for about 15 years.
Yes.
What were you doing up until then?
Yes. So I'm born and brought up in Mumbai, India, and I came to the U.S., in about 2007, you know, up until then, I was in a very, I would say, a linear path. I had already worked in India. I had, you know, I was armed with my MBA in international marketing. I'd also worked for a couple of organizations there. I wanted to kind of enhance my resume. So it was a good time for me to come to the US. I pursued another business degree in finance from UC Berkeley. In 2008, I moved to New York. That's where I met my now husband. And, you know, it was a city I absolutely fell in love with, the diverse crowd. And, you know, it just reminded me of home. Since then, up until I would say 2 years ago, my life seems very much like many other lives, I would say, very kind of typical, where I worked for very interesting job profiles. Don't want to undermine the value that added to my entire persona, to be honest. I've worked with nonprofit organizations, venture capital firms, healthcare firms, essentially in branding, PR, and marketing, which was what my education was about. So it was a good 10-year, I would say, of a corporate life, a good 10-year span of a corporate life. But something else was kind of brewing inside me, which led to Let's Curate.
Magna, why did it take you 10 years to start Let's Curate?
You know, this is one of my favorite questions, because I feel like it really gets me so excited to talk about the kind of the motive behind my platform. So, you know, I'm an avid traveler. I travel. It's always been a passion of mine. And even when I was working in corporate jobs, when I would go on holidays and things like that, it was always interesting for me to find people or, you know, places that are off the beaten track. And it so happened that over the 10 years of my travels, I kind of got in touch with 10 very interesting artisans. And strangely enough, there was a common thread between all of them. They were all individual artisans. They were not associated with any organizations. They were one man, one woman shows, doing everything right from, coming up with the idea, procuring the supplies, creating the product, marketing, all of those things. I was blown away at what they brought to the table because, you know, every time you go to a place, you know, the world is a small place now, and there are certain expectations when you go to a place in terms of what you're going to find. But I was so lucky to happen to meet these 10 people who gave me a different perspective of that place through their art, whether it was paintings or ceramics or, you know, creating fabric textiles, any of those things. I kept in touch with them just because I was so fascinated by how they were working. And I kept telling them that, you know, I have a feeling we're going to probably do something. And they were very sweet. They indulged me. Up until 2019, it was, I just kept thinking, oh, you know what, I should probably do something about this because I don't seem to find the things that they're making anywhere else. And I, you know, I like to, I would say I like to kind of dig around and find stuff that's unique to a place or to a person. You know, everyone, storytelling is a big part of any product. I feel like nowadays, even at that time, when I was interested in a product, I realized the interest was not just in the product. The interest was also in terms of
behind the story,
why did he create that? What influenced him? And the most remarkable stories come out of that. In 2019, I don't know what happened, you know, something switched and I kind of got this do or die feeling. And I went back to them and, you know, I had kind of kept in touch. I had built my relationships with them. Nice. And I just said, you know, I think it's time for me. I'm going to start a platform. Would you be open to that? The interesting thing for me also was that they were people who had no web presence. They were located in very small towns all across the 10 countries that I had kind of focused on. And they were a little... They were indulgent. They didn't know which direction I was going in. And I will forever be grateful to them for giving me this opportunity to kind of launch them into the world. And there it kickstarted. So June 2019 was when the platform went live with 10 people. And not, you know, in no ways am I being boastful or, you know, kind of too full of myself. But I felt very good because I felt that I had presented something that was unexpected. It was kind of extraordinary in terms of, you know, the techniques and the stories. And I kind of at that point felt, you know, I'm on the cusp of something very, very interesting for myself. And hopefully I can build it.
So Magna, the mission for Let's Curate is quite clear, right? It's a platform that gives these independent artisans around the world the chance to bring their products, their stories and their art to a wider audience with your help. So what is the value proposition for the customers?
The value proposition is essentially the common thread, like I said, between all these people is my thought process is, you know, I'm kind of the world is, or rather I am focused on a non-mass produced form of e-commerce or store or whatever you call it. The common thread between all these artisans are they only make handmade products. They make small batch products.
So limited edition in a way.
It's small batch, handcrafted, unique, bringing to the table some sort of legacy that they've, you know, that they've kind of inculcated or learned from their ancestors and brought their own contemporary spin. So the value proposition is this is basically a platform where you will see emerging talent, talent that you will not possibly see anywhere else, either because you know, many of the platforms are focused on volume, obviously in terms of, you know, for creating profits, which is also a very valid reason to kind of have mass produced product. I'm trying to create a sort of a collaborative space for customers as well as for creators and to create a dialogue between them. So it goes beyond the idea of a store. The essence of Let's Curate is to create a world where you literally have a relationship with the person who's making something custom for you. And by custom, I don't mean you just pick a color or you just pick, you know, the shape of a product. By custom, I mean that you actually understand each other's perspectives and create something. And, you know, 9 out of 10 times, something that's created that way is special. And it's, you know, there is no price to that.
Guys, what I love about what Magna has just shared is that she's so mission-focused, and she's passionate about helping these artisans showcase their art to the world, and has also translated into her business model. She's also rather unique in the sense that she's staying away from mass-produced products from countries like China, and she's actually only focusing on that curation process for an artisan to produce very selected pieces of work to her customers. So this is a very niche subject, and of course, it has its own niche clients as well. So that sets her apart from other competitors who can't actually produce such a tailored, customized solution to its customers. And don't you just love her passion? It's so infectious. Back to you, Magna. How have you been actually growing the platform? So you started before COVID, and I happen to know that you were attending physical fairs and setting up a physical store to get people aware of your company and the word out. But how have you had to evolve since then?
It was, you know, now when I look back, I feel like 2020 was almost an opportunity hidden behind a challenge.
Forced you to grow.
But when it hit me, March 2020, you know, I had my entire calendar filled with all these dates of all these fairs that I was going to attend. And I was so excited about it. I was going to have my first trunk show in New York City. I had booked the venue. I still remember the date. It was March 27, 2020. And I had to obviously cancel it because the entire city went into a lockdown on March 15th. But to be honest, when that happened for the first month or so, I was paralyzed. And I do want to say that, you know, when I think back, it actually gave me time to think about what I should do next. A lot of people are fearful, and I was fearful too, of being stuck and of stopping. But sometimes stopping and slowing down actually leads to something more innovative, which you may not have had the time to think through. So I had all these products which I had, you know, it was in my store and I was ready to showcase them. And then suddenly the world shut down and it took me a month to realize that, wait, I need to find an alternate avenue to still showcase these artisans because, you know, they were still depending on me presenting them to the world. So we quickly pivoted to something called limited edition. Now, remember, the beauty of Let's Curate is that no collection, you know, when you think of collection, typically you think of 50 pieces or 60 pieces. When I say limited edition, it typically means basically a mini collection of 3 to 5 pieces. So I had good thing was I had a ton of diverse products, whether it was home decor or art or jewelry or fashion or any such thing. But I had mini collections of those things. So I quickly pivoted and created something called limited edition, which essentially steered slightly away from the original objective, which was where if you like something, I get you in touch with the creator, then you talk about it, and then he makes it for you. With limited edition, that was what was available. And if you liked it, it could be shipped to you right away. So ready to ship, limited edition, all these initiatives kind of birthed during the COVID era. So limited edition now essentially means if you are a creator in any corner of the world and you have an idea and it involves just creating a couple of pieces, that's where we would showcase you. And it's custom and it's exclusive to our platform. And we, you know, promote it. We kind of also enhance it by additional avenues like video interviews with creators, creating a portfolio video for them, a media kit for them. So it's an entire package that we create when we're launching them under the limited edition collection. This, however, was because of COVID. I don't think this would have happened if I had not had everything stopped. So that was an interesting, and to be honest, now that the world is slowly coming back to its feet, those two initiatives that I launched have been so wonderful. And, you know, my platform is close to now representing almost 50 artisans. We're at 47 today.
So you started with 10 and you have about 47
right now.
Today.
So it's expanded. And I think a lot of it is because of these two new initiatives that I launched during COVID.
Magna, could you explain a little bit more about how your business model works? You actually have this limited edition pieces. Do the artisans actually ship it to you directly to hold it for them?
Typically, when an artisan signs up to be on a limited edition feature, we decide and discuss what they would make in terms of the mini collection. Now, this is something, again, where I do want to emphasize, creating is the artisan's job. You know, so this is where, you know, my job is to present them. So we go, you know, we are led by the artisan. So typically, you know, we have a discussion and they say, you know what, I can make a collection with these three pieces. Once that's right, there is no timeline. That's another thing I want to emphasize. Mm-hmm. We do not have deadlines. We don't, it's kind of anti-corporate in that sense because I don't work with a very strict framework. Because I have realized and I feel like...
You can't rush good art, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I feel like, the only way you can create is when you have time and space. And I'm willing mm-hmm. to wait for the best possible product that comes out of someone's, you know, mind or hands or whatever you may call it. So essentially when a collection theme and the product is decided, they create it, they send it to my office in New York City. And now we're going to resume in-person fairs and artist pop-ups. But essentially up until COVID was raging, we put that under limited edition. Like I said, we also kind of encouraged a lot of the artisans to talk about the product, to talk about the collection, the inspiration, the influences. And we, you know, have a lot of these webcast interviews, which have also allowed the creator to, I guess, give their own point of view. Because you may look at mm-hmm. something a certain way, but the creator has thought about his own way, you know, when it comes to execution. So it's interesting. And, you know, all these things have led to, it ties in with my brand of giving them a stage and giving them a platform. And it also, you know, mm-hmm. hand in hand, it's also helped my brand because the more people watch these things, the more intrigued they are by what the collection is about. And that has actually led the platform to expand way much more quickly than I'd expected.
So Meghna, the platform is growing. The number of artisans that you have on board is growing as well. So that means the number of stock keeping units that you're holding would also be increasing. Has it been a challenge for you managing this high number and variety of stock keeping units as well?
You know, to be honest, Ted, it's not. Just because, like I said, we don't deal in volume. I don't deal in volume. Mm. It's actually the interesting thing is the portfolio. And like I would say the product line is so diverse that it makes it a very, very interesting array of creations. So I'm not overwhelmed by the number of products that I have. Mm-hmm. In fact, you know, it's exciting to kind of see that we can present so many things from so many different countries. So even in terms of countries, we've expanded from 10 countries to about 29 countries so far. So I actually get excited when people send me stuff. Speaking of limited edition, not every artisan that we work with chooses limited edition. That's another thing. Mm-hmm. We offer a bunch of resources for the artist. They can either, you know, do a simple listing on the platform or they send me stuff.
Okay.
Or many of them, you know, just to give you an example, we represent a painter from Iran. And initially what happened was we were in conversation, fantastic point of view. I was so excited to have him on board. And just for logistical reasons, because, you know, his paintings were huge. And there was no way he could ship it to New York City without, you know, it's a huge sticker shock for either of us.
Yes.
We also decided, okay, maybe we should split the shipping cost. Even with that, it was just way too expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened was at that point, you know, we spoke about it. I was so invested in it. And I realized, you know what, it's going to be a bad business deal if I say, no, ship it. You know, we'll take care of it in whatever manner it is. So I just said, you know, I think this is going to be a bit tricky because it's art. It was going to come framed. It was, you know, like a wall-to-wall kind of a piece. So we actually stalled the conversation. Instead, what we said was, why don't we just talk about what your painting is about and the message that you want to give behind the painting? And he said, okay, let's do that. He had never done an interview before. He was quite hesitant.
Okay.
I had to kind of push him a little bit because, you know, when I heard him speak, to me, I didn't care that he didn't speak English well. It's not his native tongue.
Okay.
I just said that you literally, you know, people have to listen to what you're saying because, you know, it's something I know it's special and I'm sure lots of people will find it special. So I kind of coerced him somehow to do this interview. And invariably, there was an art gallery person based somewhere close to where he was, who watched the interview, you know, some randomly. I mean, that's the beauty of the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And got in touch with us, got in touch with him. And, you know, his painting was showcased in an exhibition out there, which was, you know, it was
you
so
really never
fulfilling.
Know who is watching, right?
And I just realized that, you know what, it does not have to be, I have realized that it does not have to be one way or the other. It can be any number of ways, as long as my brand messaging is not diluted. And that's why I kind of keep it very, very simple in terms of, you know, when I'm thinking to myself about the brand, I'm yes. always thinking it's very simple. The best way to present an independent artisan. That's all I need to do because that's the service I'm providing.
As long as they can get their voice out into the world, whether it's sold in New York or not, doesn't matter.
Because, you know, people are, it's a wonderful thing, the internet. The point is that you need to get people's attention, whether it's through a product in your shop, whether it's by letting someone talk about their background, whether it's creating a media kit. You know, a media kit is something that we prepare for emerging artists, but only for painters. So what happened was, up until COVID, whenever art galleries were looking for new people, you kind of have an in-person meeting with them, you show them your artwork, you discuss. When COVID hit, all the art galleries shut down and they still haven't resumed, yes. you know, the original form of business where you actually go in person and show your product. So a couple of painters came to, you know, I was talking to a bunch of them and they said, you know, right now, I don't know how to present my work. I have all these pieces, you know, artwork at home and I have no idea how to showcase that. And that gave me another idea. I said, okay, you know what? All they need to see is your work. So let me prepare a media kit for you. And that media kit is kind of like a calling card. You go and show it to the art galleries and see if, you know, they're open to that. Again, it was very successful for a few of them. That led to, you know, so it's a bunch of things that have just, you know, when you turn the tap, yes. the creativity tap on, it keeps flowing until you turn the tap off. So it's been interesting. I have to say, and I give all credit to COVID, to be honest.
So guys, as Meghna has just shared, what was originally a huge setback when COVID hit and she could no longer actually set up her physical stores to attend fairs has allowed her to pivot and provide so many more new initiatives that can actually showcase her artisans and their work. So remember, for every setback that you face, there could be an opportunity for you to uncover as well. Now, Meghna, you are very clearly passionate about this subject and I can see how much effort, time and passion you put towards helping these individual artisans grow. So could you share with us, how does Let's Curate share the stories of its artisans? What are the different initiatives you've actually implemented as well?
So when, like I said, when we first launched it, we launched it with a store. We had a physical store and we had an e-commerce mm-hmm. store. We were actually banking on kind of doing more in-person relationship building with customers, which didn't work mm-hmm. out. And then the e-store was our backup. Yes. Little did we know that the e-store would be our main source of revenue, at least for like the first few months. Right after that, like I've explained, we launched limited edition. We have something called Ready to Ship. Ready to Ship was what was with us in stock before COVID hit. Mm-hmm. So since we didn't have a store and we couldn't present that, we moved that quickly to something called Ready to Ship, which meant if you placed an order, the product would be shipped to you that very day. So that was the differentiation between limited edition and ready to ship, because it was, again, diverse products. So you see completely different products under ready to ship and limited edition. Another interesting thing we found while talking to customers as well as artisans is a lot of people have, just to give you an example, a friend of mine was looking for a coffee table. And, you know, she had a mood board, she had this, you know, she had all these. She was like, I want it to be this color, that color. And, she, you know, when she tried to do a simple search on Google, because there was, you know, either she goes to all the furniture stores or she does a Google search, and she tried both. And it was extremely frustrating. So she said, I just don't know how to find someone. And I don't want to just buy it off a store. I want to actually, again, talk to a person, discuss my ideas. Mm-hmm. And have him make that for me in sync with me. So it's not about the time. Yes. It's more about wanting what I want, essentially. So all I said was, okay, tell me what you're thinking. I think I may have someone whom I can connect you with. And that's how we connected her with an artisan who's not on a platform right now, but he did make the coffee table for her. And that was fantastic. And that led us to something called Seek and We Shall Find, where essentially if there is a certain kind of artwork or a certain product or a certain fashion accessory that you want to design based on your likes and dislikes, you kind of reach out to us, give us a brief description, and we set up a consultation with us, and we connect you with the person who we think would actually help you. So we typically connect you with about 2 to 3 people, and then, you know, the whole, if it works out, great. If it doesn't, you know, at least she would keep that person in mind for something in future. So Seek and We Shall Find is another very fun initiative that we've launched, because, you know, as you can clearly see, I love speaking to people.
So yes, I can clearly see that.
This just gives me an opportunity to connect with as many people as possible.
What I love about what Meghna just shared is that she created this whole new revenue stream called Seek and We Shall Find, where she connects her customers and consults with them with the right artisans to produce that customized piece of art that they are looking for. She started this because she listened closely to what her customers needed, and that allowed her to expand the business itself. So you never know, guys, if you listen to your customers, maybe there's a new revenue stream that you can add to your business as well. Now, Meghna, share with us the artist in the spotlight function that you created on your website as well.
Yes, absolutely. So Artist in the Spotlight is we've showcased a bunch of jewelry designers, but primarily it's for painters and those who work with, you know, watercolors and things like that, where we set up an entire profile for them where they can showcase their work. And not just that, they talk specifically about the techniques that they use for their product line, where they're from. And we also obviously, you know, so anyone who's looking for maybe a jewelry designer from Greece can click on, you know, our artist spotlight section and immediately connect with that person, because they get a sense of not just their educational background, you know, also
the whole story
is out there. So the concept, the branding is essentially about telling stories and building relationships. That's why I think of it as a collaborative space. And we're trying to do this in as many ways as possible, whether it's a portfolio video, whether it's a video interview, whether it's artist in the spotlight. It's to get these people in front of the camera or in front of, potential customers, and not have them behind the scenes. I found, you know, even before I launched Let's Curate, I was feverishly looking through multiple platforms just to see if there was something that came close to what I was thinking. And to be honest, it was always about the product. It was very rarely about the person who made the product. And that I find a little unfortunate, because there is no product without the creator. Mm.
That's because maybe those platforms are focusing on a more mass-produced model.
Correct.
But, you know, you're taking it and flipping the equation. You're focusing on the artisans and the unique pieces of work that they can produce. In fact, because you just shared that if somebody wants something customized, the option is there for them as well. So I think that's the unique key proposition that you're offering with Let's Curate, which is really interesting. Now, Meghna, you said that Let's Curate prides itself on uncovering hidden talents. How do you actually find these individuals, especially in the time of COVID?
Like you rightly said, you know, the first 10 was more organic, in the sense because I met them and I kind of kept in touch with them. I built relationships with them. When I launched the platform in 2019, that was a challenge for me, because, you know, I knew these people well, but now obviously I couldn't sit still with 10 people from 10 countries. I wanted to kind of expand more, because that's the essence of the brand.
Grow.
Exactly. If I am empowering independent artisans, I need to have as many as possible so that people are encouraged to, you know, kind of visit the page more often. So initially what we did was, I kind of went based on, I'm very fascinated by, cultures. So initially, because I had 10 countries, I started looking for artisans from other countries. So it was a mix. There were people who approached me as soon as the platform was launched, because a lot of them said, you know what, we actually were looking for something like that and we couldn't, and what's the process like? So once the conversation began, it led to, you know, most of the times it led to a fruitful relationship. On the other hand, I was also consciously looking for interesting people. And by then I kind of had a sense that I knew the kind of person I wanted on the platform. So essentially, it just meant me looking, whether it was, up until 2020, I was, traveling feverishly. So there was a lot of, again, connections built through my travels. But the profile was very clear in my mind as soon as I launched it. So then it was easy for me to, be aggressively promoting the messaging in terms of not looking for anyone who's working with an organization, not looking for someone who's looking to sell 10,000 pieces, 20,000 pieces. So there were two ways. Mm-hmm. One, they a lot of them approached me. And like I said, it didn't always work out initially because my thought process at that point was stuck with having the shop. It's only because of COVID that I kind of pivoted a little bit, and then I could be like, wait, we don't just need to do a shop, we can do something else. But at that point, a lot of the times it didn't work out because people couldn't send stuff, or you know, the shipping cost didn't match for them. But the thing that I did was I kept the conversation going. I have never turned anyone away, because my whole thinking behind this venture has been to keep an open dialogue. So if we don't work out one way, we would work out some other way. But, you know, and in that, I enjoy, that's the reason it was very...
And these individuals who are actually not on the platform formally are the ones who are actually providing customized solutions to your clients depending on what they need, correct?
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, if I found someone who was an exciting artisan, and even now, if I find someone who I think is perfect for the platform, but I'm unable to kind of put them in one of the five things that I have currently going, I always tell them that, you know what, we will work together. I will find a way to present your work. So I would say even after the platform was launched, it was kind of a mix of people approaching me plus me aggressively looking for talent from, you know, unexpected places. You know, we have these beautiful, there's a lady who does this Romanian lace technique, and she's from Moldova. I've never been to Moldova. Oh. And I happened to find her, you know, one of her pieces on a Pinterest board. And, you know, I went down this rabbit hole trying to find out who she was.
You investigated and you
yes,
found out
and then,
who she
you know,
was,
she's one of my limited edition artisans today. And she's a wonderful, wonderful young girl who's very talented. So the more obscure the place, the more unknown the place, the more aggressive was my search. And to be honest, I actually got, because, you know, it's, I feel like the US is a market that is very well explored. There are many people who know how to dig deep within developed countries like Europe and even Asia, Australia, New Zealand. But there are many, many little countries within Europe, you know, like Romania. We have a wonderful lady from Romania. We have someone from, of course, Greece is a prominent country. But, you know, this lady from Greece, she's actually a grandmother. And she started a business at the age of, you know, 60 or some such thing. And, you know, she does these beautiful contemporary twists on traditional Greek techniques. So I now know what kind of person I want. But initially, I kind of went towards countries that were not expected, that I have not seen. Mm-hmm. For example, if I typed something like jewelry from Romania, to be honest, I didn't know what jewelry from Romania actually meant. And that's why that kind
you
of...
You had to educate yourself.
And then,
well.
Yes, exactly. And then I was like, okay, let me just dig through and see who's, you know, what kind of artists work in Romania, what do they do? And that's how I've kind of expanded. Now it's more organic in the sense, now we actually have more people approaching us. And like I said, because I don't turn anyone away.
Yeah, because you're also getting some traction. Really,
exactly. Right? And I always say that, you know, be on standby, because if this is not working in one of these five things, I have a bunch of other ideas in my mind. Let me, you know, let me finalize it. Let me develop it. But I'm going to come back to you and I want to work with you. So I feel like on paper, I have 47 people from 29 countries right now. But behind the scenes, I probably have so many more, you know, and I'm just waiting to kind of launch them into the world.
Oh, I see. That's why the whole idea of maybe reaching out to you to get a customized piece of art as well, it's a very viable solution, because you have so many unseen individuals behind the scenes as well who are not even on the platform yet that you can't wait to show to the rest of the world. Now, that's very interesting. And I would say this model has worked very well for you, because not only are you clearly passionate about it, but you're also very good with people. And I think most importantly, you have a very strong knowledge pool of the different kinds of art. So at the start, when you had your first 10 artisans, it really sounded like you knew what you really wanted. And that's because you exposed yourself over the years, and that's something that you've keenly been interested in. So you went to plug in those holes and you're constantly educating yourself, which is, of course, a very important skill, not just in life, but in business as well. So when you actually approach these individuals or they approach you, I'm sure that the onboarding process is very important to manage the expectations as well. What was the onboarding process for you, and how have you managed your artisans over the years?
I've always kind of tried to stay true to this one thing where it's, in my mind, because without the creator, there's nothing. So for me, the artisan's needs are front and center. It's more important. In fact, I'm not being altruistic in any sense, because I feel like if I keep their needs, completely prominent in my mind, the profits will come to me in the end. So whenever whenever we agree to work with an artisan, the very first thing, obviously, is we are very, very clear about the terms and conditions. Many of the platforms, many platforms, essentially what they would do is they would take a cut from, say, a product's price, which essentially means if the artisan wanted $100, he would essentially have to sell it to the platform for, say, $75, because, the platform takes their own commission for the whole thing. In my case, I promise and I always assure, and this is true of all the artisans we represent currently, if they are pricing it at $100, that's what they would get. My commission is obviously added to the whole thing. We have a few nominal fees for producing content and things like that. But beyond that, we don't necessarily try to shortchange the artisan, and we don't kind of try to cut corners and say, oh, can you do it for like 25? Can you do it for 50? Can you do it for 75? Because remember, these are very, very special products. Many of these products take a lot of time and effort. So the price that an artisan has thought is the price that we go with. So that is the number one thing I always follow for all the artisans. And to be honest, it actually does not eat into my profits, because the way we present it, we've always got repeat business. Whenever we've, kind of shown an artisan, and, the artisan is happy, he wants to work with us more. The customer's happy. And, when an artisan is happy, the product that they send, you can see it's made with so much love. It's perfect. So I have so much confidence when I send the product over to a customer, because I always expect a 5-on-5 review, because I know it's so good.
Wow.
And I know that they will come back. So, it's kind of like it builds slowly, but it's sustained. My philosophy is to be slow, but kind of be consistent and have a very loyal pool of customers who appreciate the whole process. And I feel it would not work if I kind of haggled with the artisan for a few dollars here and there. Because, it's not obviously been all roses all the time. It's taken me time to obviously break even and, get to a point where I'm comfortable. I have, kind of enough to kind of tide me over, all of those things. But even during the darkest days, especially, the first few months of COVID, I realized that, if I kind of went back and said, oh, you know what, you sent it to us and now there's COVID, let me sell it for like $50 versus $100. It just didn't sit well, because, then I'm completely corrupting what I went out to do. And I had just launched my platform, so I didn't want to kind of compromise. And I hope I would not have to compromise in future too. So essentially, the artisan's needs are met in, simple things like when they ship the product to us, they incur the shipping costs, but we never shortchange them in terms of the price that they have thought for a certain product.
Now, Meghna, how would you like Let's Curate to grow into the future?
This question for me, Ted, is a bit, it's a problem that I'm kind of grappling in my mind. Because
how so?
There are a whole bunch of initiatives that, I'm going to be launching in the next year or so, and I'm very excited about it. The challenge for me at this point is there is so much exciting talent out there. There are certain people who, even within, our platform, because my platform only represents very specialized kind of techniques and products, even within that, I have found a smaller pool of people who are really avant-garde, who are, completely reimagining things.
Super, super niche.
It's super niche.
Yeah.
And that is so thrilling. It's thrilling for me to say that, I found this person. I found this person who's going to change the way jewelry is made. The challenge is that I need to figure out whether I whether I kind of balance both of these, I would say, philosophies, where I also go with the specialized group and the super specialized group, or do I kind of pivot a little more and just really like dig deep and stay with the like the super specialized group of people that I'm discovering now?
I see.
The idea, of course, is still the same. The messaging mm-hmm. is still the same, just to provide a platform and for me to be behind the scenes, but for these artists to get their due credit for all the wonderful things that they're doing. You know, I keep joking to my friends and, you know, even some of my customers who are now good friends, you know, without art and without art in any form, whether it's movies or books or paintings or online courses on YouTube, I don't think any one of us would have survived COVID. So I feel
that's
like,
true.
You know, the artist is supreme, and that's what my platform will continue to be. The question is, how, you know, what kind do I kind of go, which direction do I go in terms of representing what kind of an artisan? But until then, you know, I'm happy to kind of just, you know, meet new people and just try to present as many interesting people as possible.
Well, whatever direction you take it, I know you will definitely stay true to your original mission of giving these independent artisans the ability to really showcase themselves to the world. So I'm excited to see how you're going to grow into the future as well. Now, Meghna, this is one of my favorite questions. Entrepreneurship is never an easy journey. So who would you say you have an immense amount of gratitude for and you'd like to take this chance to say thank you to? Imagine I'm that person and say,
however cliched this may sound, Ted, but I have to give a whole lot of credit to my mom, to be honest. She, yes. You know, I feel like even from a very, very young age, she kind of put these seeds of thought in my mind about kind of being independent, mm-hmm. being innovative, not being boxed in, not being afraid to be out of your comfort zone. And she did it from a very young age. It's taken me 30 plus years to get to where I am. But, you know, I think the credit goes to her because she... you know, she always, my mom herself, she was a microbiologist and she switched careers midway through after I was born and she became a lawyer and she's still she's 65 and she has been practicing law for 20 plus years and she's always told me, never, never put yourself in a corner. You can always pivot. Life is always giving you chances. So never worry about, you're in a corporate job. How can you be a curator? All of those things. I think that helped me free my mind from my own judgment. A lot of times, a lot of people, it's a self-induced fear. What mm-hmm. I realized was that when I went and spoke to people and I said, hey, you know, I have this, even those 10 people that I spoke to for 10 years, I thought they would just laugh at me and they would say, oh, we don't have time to talk about this. We don't know what the concept is. We don't understand what you're trying to say. No one said that. And that's what I realized. If I had stopped myself and if I was embarrassed and inhibited and I'd never, you know, put words in my mouth and approached them, I think I would have missed out on the most fulfilling part of my life, which I'm kind of going through right now. So I think that is one of the things. I do want to mention one more thing, which... you know, my parents are very hardworking, middle-class parents. And one of the things they always said, which I think in the current generation is not given that much importance about always having reserves. You know, I worked in the corporate field for many, many years.
Yes, to save
so
up before
I did
you take
save
the plunge,
up.
Right?
I still use those reserves for many of my, initiatives. And I feel like people have this tendency or people are taught that, if you want to do something extraordinary, you burn your boats and, you know, you burn the midnight oil, you don't have a dollar and, you know, those kinds of things, which is great. It works out for some people. For me, the risk averse tendency actually worked in my favor because it kind of, I didn't have to worry about, how do I pay my bill for next month? Instead, I could use that time and energy to actually look for the right kind of person for my platform, which I think adds more value in the long run. So I also say this to my kids. It's not, not having any money and, you know, just starting something off is not as glamorous as people make it out to be. I give a lot of credit to all my corporate experience for, you know, giving me that security blanket to kind of have the strength to kind of start this venture, which is so different from what I was studying. Of course, the lessons from my corporate life are still helping me on a day-to-day basis. So never, never underestimate the value of working for someone else before you do something on your own.
If the listeners only remember one thing from today's conversation, what would you like it to be?
I would say, you know, everyone finds, it takes time for everyone to find their own thing, for lack of a better word. For some people, it's very early on in life. For some people, it's later in life. I would say the only thing to do is challenge yourself and make sure you're never too comfortable. You know, I'm always discontent. I'm perpetually discontent.
Always exploring, experimenting.
So I feel like, you know, within yourself when you're kind of getting too safe and too comfortable. There is no harm at that point in jumping, but I would say jump with caution. And then, you know, when you jump with caution, and then you'll discover yourself.
Now, Meghna, how can the listeners get in contact with you if they want to work with you on a piece of art?
First of all, I would, you know, just relay the message that I love meeting new people. So, you know, just get in touch with me, even if it's just a phone call, even if you don't have, you know, a product in mind or any kind of very definite collaborative idea in mind. The best way to do that would be through my email, info@letscurate.com, or obviously through social media. Instagram, we are at @let's_curate. These two are the easiest ways. We respond to every email, me and my team. It's a very small team. But I encourage anyone who is thinking about, you know, who's been doing some stuff at home and, you know, they're kind of hesitant to talk about it, or I would just love to begin the conversation. So please do reach out. Like I said, we never turn anyone away. We will find a way to present your work some way or the other.
Oh, Meghna, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your story and your passion for art. Thank you for, you know, sharing this with me, and I'm very glad to have made this connection with you.
Thank you so much, Ted. It's my honor, and I'm so grateful that you gave me this opportunity to talk about what I love most.
Yeah. Guys, thank you so much for joining Meghna and I in today's episode. I hope you've learned a little bit more about her platform and how you can incorporate some of her lessons into your business as well. Now, as before, if you've received any value from the show, I would love if you could subscribe to the show, leave a review on Apple Podcasts, and to share the show with somebody who'll find it useful as well. All updates, tools, and resources, and my email list are available on tedteo.com. That's TEDTEO.com. That's all from me today. I'll see you guys next time.